Welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast. It is the last day of 2025. It is the evening of the last day of 2025. We just have a few more hours left, and I'm in Eastern time, so some of you actually have already experienced this, but we will be in 2026, and what a year it's been. I was reflecting on mostly political, social things, a little bit of personal things as well, and just thinking how fast time goes. And Psalm 90 is the psalm my dad, when he does the New Year's service, always cites. And so I think about it every year, that our days are numbered. And we live 70, if by strength 80 years, but we have to number our days, prioritize our time, live in a way that shows that we actually believe life is a breath. We redeem the time. The days are evil. The days are still evil. The days are always evil. There's also good, though. There's also so many things that we can reflect on and realize the hand of God has been with us, the blessings of God, and this year's no exception. So I want to talk about a few things. I'm going to just broadly give you two categories here, maybe three. So three categories here. Number one, I felt the need to do this for the sake of encouragement, especially for you who are conservative politically, which I think a lot of this audience is. You are evangelical Christians who care about orthodox biblical theology, but that translates into generally also caring about the political climate and resisting the innovations of the left. And there's a lot of discouragement and blackpilling right now about the Trump administration. So I thought we would highlight some of the successes of the Trump administration this past year. And there's been a number of them. I can't contain all of them, but I want to remind you that there's actually good things happening as well. And we have, I think, a responsibility to expand and build on the good things, not to just trash everything and make the perfect the enemy of the good, which is what I see some people doing. And it's an interesting thing. Maybe we'll get into why that's happening. But I think we need to remind ourselves a little bit about the good things, because we started this year, I think a lot of us, on a high note and really a sense of relief that we were not getting Kamala Harris for the next 4 years on top of Biden for the previous four, and all that that would mean. I mean, there's a timeline here that would not have been as good as what we've had last year politically. So that's one thing I want to focus on. I also want to focus on some of the Christian stories, some of the evangelical American Christian stories, and the significant things that I focused on over the last year. And I realized as I was looking back on some of the efforts that I've put in, I've really been at the center of some things that have been really important. And I want to remind all of you of that, not to toot my own horn, but to encourage you, because so many of you support what I do, which I'm so thankful for, whether that's through prayer, financially, or just sharing or watching or sending an encouraging note, whatever it is. And I know many of you listen because you believe in what I'm doing and what I'm saying, the message that I carry out there. And I want to evaluate that message, what that message looks like next year. But this year, there's been some really positive momentum. And so I want to talk about that. And then the third thing is, and I've already mentioned it, but we're going to talk about next year a little bit. And maybe I'll make a few predictions. I'll certainly tell you what I am thinking of doing for next year, some changes that will be coming to the format of this particular podcast and just some of my efforts publicly. And I'll make some announcements as well. So I meant to actually do this exclusively for patrons only, just because I know I need to make more exclusive content. And the more I started putting things down on my slideshow, I thought, nah, I'm going to do this broadly. I think everyone needs to hear what I'm going to say. So it's open and available for all of you. But that doesn't mean you can't support me on Patreon or Substack or any of the other places. Links are in the info section. I appreciate it. All right. Well, let us start with the beginning of the year and a commonly shared experience. We had an inauguration of Donald Trump, which I'll be honest, I did not think it was going to happen. I was really hoping it would, hoping that we would have a Republican president. And obviously Trump was the only option there. I was hoping against Kamala Harris, despite sharing a last name with her. And it happened. And I was amazed that it happened, especially after watching everything that transpired in 2020. And so the inauguration kicks off the year. And it was just, it was surreal for me to watch this whole thing play out and to see the level of respect that the Trump administration had, even coming in, for American tradition, American history, the historic occasion that it was, and the high sense of optimism signing all of these executive orders between balls and getting things done on day one, that things that we know we needed, and I'll highlight a few of those that we needed to have happen. And he just hit the floor running with the wind at his back and a very aggressive, optimistic kind of outlook. And I want to share with you some of the accomplishments from the Trump administration. And the first thing I think that we should highlight for our purposes, meaning this podcast that has such a history and really an origin story of fighting the social justice movement in Christian institutions, fighting it also more broadly, right? I wrote Christianity and Social Justice to show the religious comparison between these two systems. And I want to focus on what happened with DEI, because obviously there's a spiritual aspect to this. There's a political aspect. This was funded. It was well orchestrated. And it seemed like every institution in our society was lined up against the truth. And through efforts of other folks like yourselves in various places, we have been able to halt a lot of that progression and even push it in the other direction to some extent, which is a high accomplishment. You remember 2020 and how just overwhelmed you felt and isolated you felt. And do you feel that way now? I don't think so. And that's such an accomplishment and such a wonderful thing. And so the DEI policies that Trump rolled back, I think, are what I want to focus on first. He ended implicit bias training for federal employees. He ended DEI metrics for federal contracts. In other words, having a contract with a company and being forced into contracts with minorities or women or LGBTQ plus owned businesses, because that's the quota you have to make. That's the emphasis you have to have. And he ended that. He ended the diversity offices in various federal administrative places. And we don't have that anymore. I mean, that's a huge thing. He moved to withhold federal funding for a gender affirming care for minors. Now, this is interesting because there's a bill right now to actually that's been passed by the House. It probably won't get passed by the Senate. The Congress has been a big holdup, and so have the courts for a lot of the things the Trump administration has tried to do. But they're trying to make this actually illegal, and we'll see what happens with that. But at the very least, from the executive office, they were able to make it to withhold federal funding. The executive order protecting women's sports, that was one of the early victories. And this is, again, this is federal, right? So if there is a league or a school or any place getting federal money and they want to put biological men with women, they can't do that anymore. They will open themselves up to lawsuits if they do. This might seem little, but I think it's significant because our identity is significant. Black Lives Matter Plaza, you remember in DC, Black Lives Matter Plaza, and they named it that, and it had on the asphalt Black Lives Matter insignia. Well, it's now Liberty Square. They cleaned it all up and they renamed it Liberty Plaza, not Liberty Square, Liberty Plaza. Restoring historical monuments and names. This is one of my big issues, and you know that. I made a documentary on the monument issue called American Monument. I did the 1607 Project to craft a positive vision for America. I really put a lot of effort into historical efforts. And this is something near and dear to my heart. I think our identity does matter, our regional, cultural, national, all of that, the heroes that we look to. And obviously, there's hundreds of monuments that came down. They're not all going back up. A lot of this happened on the state and local level, local municipalities. But where the Trump administration could do something, they did do something. They did rename forts that had their names stripped. They did put back up Robert E. Lee's picture at West Point. I mean, I grew up not far from West Point, and I remember seeing it there the times I would go down there. He was a legend there, and they West Point scrubbed that all. I mean, it was dystopian how they were erasing street names and everything, and that's all coming back. And they they put back the biggest thing to me, the Reconciliation Monument at Arlington National Cemetery. What a disgrace to take down that particular monument to reconciliation. And they put it back up. And so this is a big thing to me. And I'm really grateful that the Trump administration pursued those things. Let's look at January 6th a little bit, just as one issue that was kind of looming over conservatives, looming over Trump when he was out of office. It was like the big moral stain, supposedly, from the perspective of the left. Well, we've had the pipe bomb investigation to get to the bottom of that. We've had, and this is the big thing, honestly, that we've had the pardons and commutations for over 1,500 people who were charged in that incident. That's an amazing, incredible thing. And I think Trump needs to get credit for this. When it comes to the pro-life front on abortion, pardons for 23 pro-lifers who Biden charged because they were supposedly obstructing the entrance to an abortion clinic, pardoned by Trump. He reinstated the Mexico City policy so that our tax money doesn't go to NGOs overseas funding abortions, withheld Planned Parenthood funds as much as they possibly could. The courts were fighting him on a lot of the things that I'm mentioning, including this last one. And they've been fairly successful in getting Planned Parenthood's even shut down. So what about corruption? Well, we had the $175 billion in taxpayer savings via DOGE. And I understand DOGE is kind of mixed. There's the Federalist, even when they were having their staff pick the winners and losers. One of the staff members picked winner DOGE and another staff member picked loser DOGE because it, whatever success they had, it dissipated. I know from just the people I'm connected to in the government, there was a lot of sloppiness. A lot of the people who should have gone didn't go. A lot of good people ended up going to the private sector. There's a lot of mixture there. But at the end of the day, there was a lot of exposure to USAID specifically and other federal deep state, administrative state, I should say, efforts. And there was money that that I think was saved. And even if it was just the exposure of here's how bad the corruption is, that's also worth it. And I know that can be discouraging, but we need to know how bad it is to be able to get at it. And I think none of that really surprised me all that much. I think I was aware. I think people who are paying attention politically were aware. Yeah, the rot's pretty deep. But for those who weren't, that really jolted a lot of people. Oh my goodness. I did not realize we were spending this much money on frivolity and ridiculous things overseas. So you had the right now currently happening, the HHS freeze on Minnesota childcare funding and expanded investigations into the social services fraud. I mean, you saw the video of this independent journalist who is basically a YouTuber, but he teamed up with a guy who had been investigating what was happening in Minnesota for a while and with the Somali refugees specifically on these empty daycare buildings. And how did $9 billion go into this? Well, Trump administration did act. I know people were immediately saying, I mean, and they were getting a lot of traction online for it. They still are, that there's not going to be any arrests. There's not going to be any pushback. There's not going to be anything positive going on here. Guys, some things take time and Trump can't do every single thing, but there was already a probe into some of this corruption. And there's even a call to deport. We'll see what happens with it, but some of the people who were involved in this fraud from Somalia to denationalize them, naturalize rather them, I guess, nationalize and naturalize. But we'll see what happens. The Trump administration is trying to do something about this, though. It may not be as much as you want. It may be too little. It is something, though. There would be nothing with Kamala Harris. The Epstein files were eventually released. And yes, Trump, I know the getting there took a while. I think the pro-Trump assumption is that he thought the Democrats had tampered with the files and that they were going to be weaponized and it was a nothing burger. But he eventually, he said, yeah, let's declassify. Yes, some of them are redacted. Some of the redactions, funny enough, weren't actually redacted. You could like copy and paste the black part of it wasn't actually sufficient to cover up what text was there. But yeah, it just shows deeper corruption. It shows, I think, a lot of things we already probably knew, but he did do that to his credit. And so all the people saying that Trump is so terrible, he's corrupt, he won't do it. I mean, he did. So just give him a little credit for it. And again, you know, I should probably just emphasize, I voted for Trump despite some of the moral failures and things like that. So I'm not like saying he's the pinnacle of moral virtue in every way, or the best president we've ever had in every way. But goodness, I think that when you only have one tool in your tool case, you need to use it. And Trump has been, I think, a great asset. He's pushed the needle in the right direction. I don't want us to forget about that. And I do see a lot of people trying to make the perfect the enemy of the good here. Military, $36 billion army overhaul, modernizing our military. It needed to happen. Recruitment surge. We have more soldiers now than we've had in a long time. That was becoming very scary. Ended open transgenderism in the military. On immigration, over 622,000 deportations in 2025, 1.9 million self-deportations. That's over 2.5 million people leaving the country. And yes, it's a drop in the bucket. There's so much more to go, but we're going in the right direction. That's the point. This is a scaling issue. These things have happened for decades. How are we going to solve them immediately? We can only do what we can do. And so we have to expand on and build on what's happening, not just say, well, it's not enough. Forget about Trump. Let's get Newsom in there or something. Like some people are saying, can you believe that? Fentanyl trafficking at the southern border is down 56%. That was such a big issue last year. All the people dying of fentanyl overdoses, and the tariffs came to play in this as well. He used the tariffs to get cooperation on the border and to get narcotics filtered. Speaking of tariffs, now tariffs, there's a lot of mixed stuff with tariffs, and we'll see moving forward what actually the long-term effect of this is. But let me just highlight two things that seem good to me. China is the number three import to the country now. The most importations that come in, it's not China anymore. They're number three. I think that's a good thing, actually, for a foreign policy kind of defense posture, not necessarily economic, but I think it's just not good to be so reliant on China. The trade deficit was $136 billion in March. It's $53 billion in September. Now, there's different economic schools that look at this and wonder whether that's good or bad. It should signal in the long run that we will hopefully have more manufacturing in the United States, and we'll see what happens with that. I'm a little bit of a skeptic that tariffs are going to be the greatest economic asset when it comes to like the math of the whole thing. But I do think there are consequences that you don't see on a math board. There are social consequences to having manufacturing jobs in the United States and not being as reliant on foreign countries and getting their cooperation on things like trying to stop fentanyl coming into our country. And I think those things have been proven to be at least somewhat successful. On foreign policy, he brokered a major ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. He negotiated. This is kind of weird. I thought I had edited this. I don't know why Kosovo Serbia is on here, so ignore that. He negotiated resolutions in the Armenia Azerbaijan situation. I know that didn't get a lot of press, but you had, I think it was like 100,000 Armenians leaving Armenia over this, and he got it stopped. He secured commitments for NATO allies to raise spending to 5% of GDP. That's unprecedented. That means NATO is going to be pulling their own weight more. He withdrew from the Paris Climate Agreement. And he also basically ended the 12-day war. And I don't think he gets credit for a lot of these things. Maybe we'll talk about that a little more. But so here's a few like trends that I want to focus on. The end of mainstreamed DEI. Are we at the end of this? And I think one of the big flashpoints was this Sydney Sweeney advertisement, which frankly, I had to find the right picture because I was like, this is not a good advertisement. But the whole framing of she has great genes and then the left reacting by saying, isn't that racist in some way because she's white, and then her not really caring. And I think even though she's clearly on the left, there seems to be a fatigue over the racism card. And I think We may be entering, I think we are entering a new era on this. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think that's a positive development. And of course, another thing on the political front that I think is a trend, it's a negative trend, but it is a trend, is the right is very fractured. We had the death of Charlie Kirk. And I think so many people are surprised to find to what extent Charlie Kirk was holding the right together. He would host things with people of differing perspectives and try to help them all get along. His tent was too broad for me at times, I'll tell you that much. And at the same time, though, he was, I think, affable with people of all these different perspectives. And because of those relationships and because of the influence of Turning Point USA, they were able to help focus everyone when the time came on the left. And without his influence here, it seems like the right is just eating itself alive. And it's a very unfortunate thing to see. And of course, Candace Owens being probably the most prominent figure on the right that is pointing fingers at the right, saying that even Turning Point USA is somehow complicit in the assassination of Charlie Kirk or the cover-up supposedly over this. We have a trial right now of Tyler Robinson. That's going to be something we'll keep an eye on moving into 2026. But Candace is still spinning all kinds of weird stuff about it. And there are people who believe her. And I know it's funny because there's people who think like, well, John, after COVID, why would you trust the government? And I'm thinking, after COVID and Q, I know it drives people nuts when I say QAnon, because they're like, that's what the media said. Okay, but you know what I'm talking about, QAnon. Why wouldn't you feel, why wouldn't you take things with a grain of salt that come from any source? Like why, unless it's a trusted source you've been following for a long time that has a good track record, good institutional affiliations and standards and those kinds of things, why would you trust just based upon whether or not the narrative makes you feel a certain way, which is kind of how Candace thinks through things. This isn't about beating up on Candace, but I just think she's kind of the primary example of the right eating itself post Charlie Kirk. But you have other flashpoints, right? The Israel influence and now the Qatar / Muslim influence now has become a big flashpoint. And which one is a threat? Which one is more of a threat? Is there a threat? Should we be allies with Israel? These are all questions. What happened at the USS Liberty, right? I know more now about the USS Liberty than I think I ever did. And I've read a few books on it, and I'm probably going to do an episode on it, but I'm coming to the same conclusions I did when I studied Middle Eastern history in undergrad. And I'm just like, man, dude, there's a lot of people who I think listen to a few things, maybe a few speeches or podcasts, and without examining too deeply will form an opinion, and maybe not even a fully developed opinion. That's maybe the consequence of short news cycles, of online voices. I try to be helpful in this particular realm, but there's just a lot of like media cycle, form opinion, and then as you're cementing that opinion, oh, new media cycle, new issue, and you never quite figure it out, but you do form a belief. And one of the things I hope we can do on this show is give you some real hard, you know, primary source rooted evidence you can sink your teeth in on things. And so one of the announcements that I'm making now, I guess, but I will be focusing a little bit more, at least, on the Israel issue, even though it's something I feel like I've been dragged kicking and screaming into. It's not my favorite topic, but it is a topic that I need to, I think, address more. The situation regarding Islam, though, is also concerning. The influence that Qatar has on our education system, on our media, what's happening in, I mean, we just looked at it in Minnesota with some Somalians. Very concerning to me. This is in the United States of America. And now you have the mayor of one of our major cities, Minneapolis, giving speeches in a foreign language. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Waving foreign flags. It's not the Bonnie Blue flag. I know some people joke about it. It's the Somalian flag to them. The even changing the state flag of Minnesota to look more like it's a Somalian flag, which I mean, I don't know if that was the motivation presented, but it does look that way. So it's just a very dystopian thing to think about happening in the United States. There's foreign influence happening from multiple places. And I think it's been happening for a long time, but people are a little more aware of it. Maybe in some places it's even become exaggerated to a point, but it's a concern. And I do think there is a legitimate concern to be had about foreign influence. I don't think we should just blame everything on it's the Muslims or it's the Jews or it's Israel and we don't have the answer. That's not exactly fair, but and then there's certainly ideologies that would love to do that, but we don't want to be the pawns in a foreign game. And I think that's one of the trends of 2025. We didn't start out the year the same way we're ending the year, especially Israel, more and more of a flashpoint, and to some, the number one issue. And that does frighten me a bit, because this is where the left and the right can have their own coalition. And I've heard Nick Fuentes, I've heard Tucker Carlson both talk about the need for a new coalition. Tucker Carlson says at the America Fest, we need a coalition of decent people. And it's disgusting what people are saying about Islam. I mean, he just had a radio show too, I think, where he said something. He said that since 9/11, we haven't had any terrorist attacks in the country. And so to be concerned about Islam is an Israeli op. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? I mean, I just immediately in my head, I'm like, Boston Marathon. You know, was it the Fort Hood shooting? I mean, there's tons of them. People were pointing out that there was even a guy at the Daily Caller, which is Tucker Carlson's organization, who was killed in a terrorist attack. But anyway, all that to say, Tucker went on in that and to say, hey, we would get like, you know, up to 85% of the country, which means a whole lot of Democrats, if we just focused on the decent people. And, you know, talking about how terrible it is in Republican circles for what they say about Islam. And then you have Nick Fuentes saying that, well, we could do this populism thing where Democrats give up immigration and Republicans give up, what did he say they had to give up? The free market. They have to give up the free market. And if we do that, we can come together. And I'm thinking, and what about all these other social, what about abortion? Aren't there other issues that are also important that the right has had, that the Republican Party at least has had as part of their platform for a long time? If Israel becomes the number one thing, you will start to see more cooperation between elements of the left and the right who are very interested, because the left have been interested in way longer, because they view Israel as a Western colonial outpost in that region of the world. And so I'll be frank with you guys, and I might take flack for it, but I think if we have to keep the arrangement with Israel going in order to solve immigration, we don't really have a choice. That is we don't have a country if we don't solve immigration. That has to be a like top priority. It really does. If we only had 2.5 million, a little over that, we have a long ways to go on this. We're going to need more time. We're going to need more Republican victories. We're going to need, if it's Vance, whoever it is, to continue what Donald Trump is doing and hopefully what we don't need is defeats, reversals, because of an issue that is not primary to the continuation of our country. That is my opinion on it. Obviously, I think all these other issues are connected to immigration. If the Democrats get permanent majorities because of immigration, then we become California. And guess what? You're not getting any pro-life anything. You're not getting all the things Trump has done, despite the fact that he's not the most pro-life president ever in his official views. He is still doing a tremendous amount of good in that arena. So anyway, I think I just wanted to say that I think the right's fractured and there's much more that could be said there. I wrote an article about some of this, and I think of the title, it's on Substack. I think it's the title, When the Right Rejects Rules is the title of it. And you go read that if you want to know more about my thoughts on that particular topic. We had tragedies, and did I spell tragedies wrong? Man, we're a professional show here. We had tragedies for in the evangelical world. We had John MacArthur and we had Vodi Bakum die this year. And man, I'll tell you what, that is a hard thing for me. Knowing Vodi Bakum personally and John MacArthur being someone that I've been influenced by and having a family connection to, I could still, you know, I look back and just feel very sad about those things. At the same time, we have to rely on the sovereignty of God. And I think the right fracturing and then the conservative evangelical right fracturing, not necessarily political, but theological, These things are happening simultaneously. And part of it is in the wake of these deaths. Would it have happened anyway? I don't know if it would have happened to the extent. Maybe. I think it would. But John MacArthur really did hold a lot of evangelicals together. He was like a grandfather. Everyone kind of looked to him and respected him. I was seeing people that I don't particularly care for, and they don't particularly care for me, but they really all honored John MacArthur. He had such a legacy in that particular world. Bodie Bauckham also commanded just a lot of respect. And without those unifying figures, you are left with a lot of smaller platforms that are going in all kinds of different directions, that have all kinds of different priorities, that are not really united. And the respect and the command and the just sort of that lion's that gravitas, it just doesn't exist anymore. There's very few people. I mean, who is Sinclair Ferguson? I mean, who really commands respect of a lot of people in this world? And so the Lord's going to have to raise up leaders, and we're going to have to be open to being those kinds of leaders, whether it's on a local level or beyond. Andrew Appaport pointed out, maybe this is one of the things the Lord's doing. Maybe he is trying to get us to focus more on, hey, local church, local pastor, local region, and the national conference stuff and all that. Maybe that time has come and gone. And that's something that's worth chewing on. So that's one of the big things that happened. Let's see, what else? Let's talk a little bit about what I've been doing, right? So I don't know why it formatted weird, but it did. So what we accomplished, and I say we because, hey, you are part of this. You really did enable me to do the things I've done this year. And here's some of the highlights. American Reformer, and I just saw Center for Baptist Leadership had the same slot for me. Number four, my article, Silent Takeover, which was a compilation, really, of my experiences in making the First Baptist Naples documentary, the David Platt documentary, and then this documentary on the hostile takeover or a takeover attempt at Faith Baptist Knightdale in North Carolina. And the parallels were just eerie to me. And so I did this article, long form article, and a lot of people read it. A lot. I mean, I happen to know that Tucker Carlson read it, and people of that caliber. I happen to know people like Franklin Graham, you know, watched one of those documentaries. I mean, those are the kind of people, along with all of you guys, but people with significant platforms are somewhat aware of what's happening, of what we've been doing. And Center for Church Reform Initiative was invaluable in this, but look, this kind of stuff is happening also because you have enabled me to help direct some of it. And I really appreciate that. So those articles were some of the biggest articles of the year for American Reformer and Center for Baptist Leadership. Obviously, the Defending Faith Baptist documentary went out there. That was a really big effort. I think it really exposed the kind of tactics J.D. Greer has used in his ministry, which are not pretty. Against the Waves, Christian Order in a Liberal Age, came out early in the year, I think in March or April, I can't remember. But I don't have the stats pulled up. That was a first book that from TruthScript Press, and it's done fairly well. TruthScript Press wants to do more, but I have more book ideas. If you haven't read that book, everyone who's read it has told me good things. I haven't heard anything negative. So, well, okay, the one person told me some negative things, but they were coming from, I think, a very different framework. Everyone else that has read it has really just said it's really helpful. So, and then of course I got into music for the first time. I put out an album, Driving Down a Mountain Road. I just had fun. That wasn't like something I'm serious about, like going to Nashville and doing anything bigger than that. I'd love to connect with some artists where I could write songs and they could perform them or something, but it was just a kind of a labor of love. And it just, here's who I am and here's what I care about. But there's a lot of, there's some worship songs. There was just songs about a lot of things that I think are important. So I have recorded 8 songs already, and I think I have 2 or 3 more to go. I have to still write a few more, but I've already recorded 8 in studio for my next album, which will be coming out probably in the spring, which the working title is Heritage American. So we'll see that term. I still like that term. I think, hey, American heritage, I think is a great thing. And I want to kind of lean into that more. And it's really, it's different than the next album. It's a lot different in that the songs are pretty much all about history, region, American identity, heritage. So anyway, you can look forward to that. If you're into that thing, I mean, it's kind of country folk sounding. It's what I like. Also, I started writing for the Federalist this year. I hadn't written for them previously. Well, I'm trying to think, did I write for them last year? I don't think so. I think this was the first year, maybe it was the end of last year, but I started a Substack that has been tremendously successful in a very short period of time. I think I found my niche. So if you haven't subscribed, I think it's just at John Harris. Did an event, was part of an event at Princeton Seminary. I never thought that would happen. That was kind of cool, on Karl Marx. And that was, a month ago. Spoke at various churches across the country. And let me tell you, some of you folks are such a blessing and so generous. It's good to be reminded that there are some really neat places in this country where you have solid pastors, good congregations, normal people. Get offline and just like go take a drive sometimes. And it's been really great to watch that. And some of you have been very generous and enabled me to keep doing what I'm doing. I was interviewed by World Magazine, by Politico, and The Atlantic. And those, it might have been more. Those are just the ones that came to the top of my head when I was thinking. I was like, who have I been interviewed by? I think the Politico story is the only one that's live that I'm actually quoted in, but I was interviewed by the other two. I'm pretty sure the one, I think there's one coming out at least from The Atlantic on John Mark Comer. So we'll see what happens with that. But that was kind of cool. And let's see, what are highlights? I started the book series this year. That's exclusive for patrons. And we're going to do in January, Lord willing, the John C. Calhoun Disquisition of Government. In fact, I have it sitting somewhere close. I think it's right here. Yep, it is. It's actually not that big. So there it is. John C. Calhoun's Disquisition of Government. That should be coming out pretty soon. But that's exclusive for my supporters on Substack and Patreon. And I should just explain the whole idea behind that is to help craft a positive vision, to retrace our steps, realize the heritage that we stand upon because it's so forgotten. So there you go. And then we have, let's see, continued pressure on evangelical institutions and leaders. So I mentioned John Mark Comer, J.D. Greer, I mentioned. I've done a few articles on the Southern Baptist Convention. Some of them are in the Federalist. And of course, keeping up with the news cycle of the PCA and all of these things. Hosted the Music and Masculinity and the Christianity in the Founding Conferences. I was realizing today, you know, I don't think I've uploaded all the videos from Music and Masculinity. I need to do that. I'm a one-man show, though, and I just have so much going on. But note to self, get that done. Everything from the other one, Christianity and the Founding, is uploaded. So these are some really great lectures. If you want to know about the rich kind of American history surrounding our founding and what Christianity had to do with that. So those things are happening. And then next year, what am I looking for? Well, I have a big SBC project. It's probably one of the most ambitious things that I've ever decided to do concerning the SBC. And you will get more information on that as it comes out. But I'll just be pretty blunt with you. I would like to see a conservative as the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. And for the first time in a long time, I think it might actually be possible. And I think I see a way for it to happen. And I am gathering my strength to help out with the effort. And some of those who are in the Patreon group, you've even volunteered to help me because it's a big workload. We started that today. We started the actual groundwork of that today, grunt work of that. And so you'll hear more as time goes on. I'll need your help. I want to have a more streamlined focus on Christian institutions, which we have been focusing on. So I'm not going to change that. But also encouragement. I've been thinking about this. Man, people really need encouragement. I think what really got me was that article I did on the men who stayed about It's a Wonderful Life and all, and how that meant so much to so many people, including the wife of the guy who played the young George Bailey in the film. That made my day. I really want to focus more on that stuff. And the video I did about struggling with singleness and infertility during the holidays, that resonated with a lot of people. And I'm just realizing a lot of y'all are discouraged and you need a healthy dose of truth. I think the algorithms are feeding you mostly crud. They're feeding you your worst fears. They're making you anxious and panicky. There's a lot. If you start thinking about all the things happening in the world, of course you're going to get anxious and panicky. But why do that? What can you really control in your, what kinds of things should you be? You should be generally aware of what's going on, but what kinds of things are within your control? That's what God's put you here for. And so I want to remind you about real things, and you can hold me to it. I think people need more spiritual living water. I think a lot of the platforms that are getting big right now are tapping into the features of the algorithm that really do present to you your fears. And you sort of have like a brotherhood of anger and betrayal. And I don't want that for this group. I don't care if we have to sacrifice size. We're not, by the way. I think on every social media platform we have grown this year, it hasn't been to the moon, except on Substack. That's been crazy, but it has been healthy growth. And I want to keep that healthy growth. I want the people who are stable, who are mature, who ask good questions, who can be a helping hand and a life raft for their neighbor in this audience. That's who I'm looking for, to craft the positive, the bold, the helpful, healthy vision for what lies ahead. Because I do think there is hardship lying ahead. And we need men of virtue. We need women of virtue too. Okay. Heritage American album. I mentioned that. Let's see. Oh, a pro-life book project. Yes. I didn't even finish saying focus. Okay. So history too. We're going to keep doing historical stuff and also some foreign policy. So I am going to focus on some of the Israel stuff. And I will mention, for the first time, I've never been to Israel. I had an opportunity a few years ago and I went to Turkey instead. I have an opportunity again and I'm going to take it. I'm going to go to Israel this next year. And including going to the border of Gaza. And I've already been reading up on all this stuff. And I want to be very careful. I want to take this whole issue piece by piece. I don't want to do holistic hot takes on the whole thing, although I probably could. That's how most people have been handling it that I've seen. And there's just been a lot of egregious errors people have made. I want to handle this in a very straightforward, hopefully dispassionate, but very kind of common sense way, and giving you helpful information for you to make good political decisions. It's not going to be the primary focus. I can't let it do that. But I know that it's ripping some people apart from groups they're in and causing a lot of confusion because of the emphasis on it. And I will be talking about it some more. So I just want to let you know that. All right. Pro-life book project. Yes, I do. I'll announce more about that probably towards the summer. But yes, I do have a project that's been in the works now for about a year. I've been more in the thinking phase, but when I have it kind of all mapped out and I just need to put it to paper. And it's on an issue that I don't see anyone else really focusing on, and it needs to be focused on. So those are all the details I'll give for now. Heritage American music album already talked about. I anticipate some more institutional mainstreaming, I'm hoping, this next year. So that should be good. And yeah, predictions, I guess. I think we're still in a phase. I was just telling someone this yesterday to try to encourage him. We're still in this phase of like the fracturing is still happening. I don't know that. I think it's time to build, but it's time to build locally and with people you really know and trust that you're on the same page with. And identifying those people in the internet world is extremely difficult right now. And I think we're not in the phase of doing that at scale. I think there's going to be more sifting. And I think hopefully by the end of next year, there'll be more alliances forming that are over some shared, tangible, real things you can sink your teeth into. But yeah, I think we're just kind of in this a dark place. We need to get out of it as much as we possibly can before the midterms. I want to lend a hand to that as much as I can. And we certainly need to get out of it before the election in 3 years. So those are my political aspirations. Personally speaking, I didn't really put anything personal there. I'm pursuing eldership at my church. My daughter's growing. My family's doing fairly well. And, you know, we're just kind of taking life by the horns and things are busy, but you know, we're getting her done. And I'm just very grateful for the life God has given me. And so many of you have been the blessings he's put in my life to enable it to happen. So I'll get to some questions and comments and we'll go from there. Can you please stay in America and write more articles about the men here? Your writing truly blessed me. Oh, thank you. I don't care about Israel. I am so tired of the subject. I would agree with you. I really am very tired of the subject too. And so I do want to emphasize the fact that I'm not going to let this take center stage. I am going to write about it though, because there are men who need direction on this. And some of them don't have the time to just sift through all the sources. So I just read two books on the USS Liberty to give you an example, from very different perspectives. And I have an advantage, I guess. I'm not saying I'm like the best on everything or I've been trained by the most elite institution or anything like that. I do have an advantage in that I have been trained academically, historically, and I could spot right away. I was like, this guy's fudging stuff, you know, in one of the books. It's like he is massaging, emphasizing, leaving things out. I'm like, he's got an agenda. It didn't help that within the first two pages, he bought into the Trump good people on both sides of the Nazi issue hoax. So I was like, okay, this guy's got an axe to grind. The other book, a lot more dispassionate, a lot more, here's what we know, here's what we don't. I'd like to just, on some of those issues, be able to separate some wheat from chaff for you all and let the chips fall where they may. This is what happened, okay? This is as far as we can go in understanding what happened. And I think that'll be helpful. This isn't going to be the main focus. This is a temporary thing. I want to get, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 like issues kind of hammered out, put them out there. And maybe once a month, I'll give you an article on it. Okay. I'm going to be focusing more, much more on domestic. Here's what we need to do in our local communities. Let me encourage you guys. You're doing the right thing, or here's what you could be doing different. Here's what I see. In fact, I just wrote an article this morning about this to some extent. And I'm going to be giving critiques, but encouragement. And that's, I think that there's more of a return on that investment, but I do think I need to do something for this because people are getting tangled up in it. And kind of sad for me to see it, to be quite honest with you, but not that it's not important. I mean, foreign policy is important. It's never been my favorite thing. Diplomatic history is not the most interesting history to read. It really isn't, but for me at least. All right. What do you think the best way to encourage young men who are constantly blackpilling? Some of them you can't reach, but you should try. And I have been able to encourage some, both in the dating scene. I've been able to encourage some, which is really encouraging to me that there's guys who actually are going on dates with girls because they heard me say it. I'm like, oh, kind of sad it took me, but I think you just have to keep telling the truth. Human nature doesn't change, right? That's, we know this. Circumstances change. Guys are still made for girls. Girls are still made for guys, right? So if they're blackpilling on something like that, you've got to just bring them back to home base. Like, look, women and men are made complementary. It's a hard hill. You got to climb it. There's been hard times in the past in other, I mean, think of frontier pioneers who had to do mail order brides and that kind of thing. I mean, our civilization has to continue. We're at 1.6 replacement rate. You just got to take guys. Sometimes it's personal. It's like one-on-one. You got to take them by the, put your arm around them. And I can't do that with everyone, but I can do that with some. And I have been able to do that with some. And that's the biggest return I see is that you just take an interest in a guy, say, compliment him. Hey, you're sharp on this. I really like that you think this way, or you do this, or you're skilled here. You would be surprised at how many of them warm up to you. Start with compliments in the real life. I always use the metric, you know, you got to encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, and admonish the unruly, but be patient with everyone. Some of my shows are really heavy on admonishing the unruly because they need to be. And sometimes the black pillars who are encouraging others to a black pill, they got to be admonished. It takes wisdom to discern those things. But black pill is a fatalist response after being red pilled. Yeah, it's like, well, yeah, like the Jews control everything. So we can't, what can we even do? How do we even know we're not being controlled right now? I mean, that's where that leads, right? These all encompassing narratives. Like, you know, women are all feminists. They'll never, you know, the boomers have just destroyed America already. We're just in the ashes and we can't do anything. Like, you've inherited a lot of good things. Okay. Stay in the Word says, where can I find John's work on J.D. Greer? The men's Bible study is starting a series with J.D. in January. Read my article. I mean, it's in different places. I don't have like a comprehensive Greer article, but read the article on the Silent Takeover for American Reformer. You can watch the documentary Faith Baptist about Faith Baptist Church. I talk about J.D. Greer a bit in on my YouTube channel. You're watching it now, so go type in Conversations That Matter, J.D. Greer. There's a few episodes where I go into Greer stuff. Megan Basham and I actually just did an episode on The Third Way, and we, I think, mostly focused on Greer, if I'm not mistaken. But there's a ton of stuff out there, so... Cosmic Treason says it may or may not overlap with accelerationism. It overlaps, that you can give up trying to make things better, but actually hope for and try to speed up the collapse of the system without a positive vision. Here's the problem with that. Okay. Let me just tell you right now. And I know guys, there's a lot of guys who are accelerationists. I kind of think, and it's hard to pin down a guy like Nick Fuentes. I think he's basically an accelerationist. How else do you get to like the whole, Gavin Newsom's a Chad, so we should vote for him over JD Vance, knowing his policies will destroy the country? Because you think that you have to push it so far that the whole system fails so that you can rise from the ashes. That's the idea. It's a terrible, terrible idea. And the reason I can say that is because point me to one example in history where it's worked out that way. Less than in Europe, as we've had demographic collapse and issues with economics and other things. It is always the frog gets boiled and you're like, we're going to rise up and we're going to, people just get used to it. And in just about every case I can think of, I mean, look at Great Britain right now. What's going on there? Is there any hope for Great Britain? Oh, things were, wait till they really push it far. When? It's pushed so far now. Their society's dying. London isn't London. Islam is going to be the religion. The birth rate. I mean, it's awful. So what, I mean, if accelerationism works, it should be working right now in Great Britain, and it's not. And great respect for the guys who are trying to do something about it. It's just, it's like the guys who say, well, real communism's never been tried. It's like, you know, it says real accelerationism ever really been tried. When things get bad, they tend to get bad. It's not a great strategy, I don't think. I understand the logic behind it. I get it. I just am looking at the lamp of experience, and I'm not seeing that it works that way. It seems to normalize things. Who would be your candidate for Pastor Grace Community Church? I don't know. I don't know. Sorry. Where can I find anything about Nicholas Flores? Nicholas Lindsay? I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. Let's see. Try to get a few more questions, and I got to end the show because my daughter's got to go to bed. How's your little man? It's a little girl, but she's doing great. She's a peach. I think the network of MacArthur's biblically based churches will be positive influence for a long time. Yeah, I mean, it's a legacy that's been built up over the course of decades. So, of course. I thought you supported Kamala because of her last name. Wow. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. I just saw a poll that Barna has discovered that a higher proportion of Gen Z is attending church now than any other generation. That's big news. I saw that too. I've seen conflicting evidence with that. We'll talk about that more in a future podcast. I've been tracking that stuff pretty closely. Barna's seems to be reporting positive stuff that I want to believe on that. And I'm so hopeful it's true. We ended last year with more people buying Bibles than ever before or in a long time. Bible sales were up like by 15%. We're ending this year with some mixed polls. One is like religion is holding stable. One is, hey, look, Gen Z, especially Gen Z men, are attending church more, are interested. I think we're going to know more next year, like the end of next year, as far as whether or not this really took. Okay, so people are reading the Bible. People are interested in religion. Does that translate into conversions is the question. Is there a revival? Are we in it? Is it coming? I want to hope for that. We should pray for that. I have my skepticisms about it. There's also a Christian identitarian thing happening simultaneously. Christ is King, interest in being a Christian as far as an identity marker, because that means you're, you know, that's against being Jewish and against being Muslim in people's minds and that kind of thing. And the question is real conversion happening? That's always the question. Because without real conversion, you don't have a Christian culture anyway. You have to have real converts to make Christian civilization, to have the people who aren't converts go along with what the converts want to do. Like, that's always a necessary thing. You have to have a core. So we'll see. All right. Well, next video, John, put out your predictions. Well, I did put out a few, right? I said, I think the fracturing is going to continue on the right. But I'll add this. I think we're going to reach a point, though, where people get so fed up and tired and they start filtering out of these more factious groups. Candace Owens will lose some of the audience. People are going to realize that the manufactured image online is not all it's cracked up to be. At least I'm hoping that. I think that makes sense. Like, it's such a cheap manufactured image. And so they'll look for reality, skin in the game. Who's actually taking real risks, not fake risks that get you a reward. That's not risk. Being edgy is not even a risk now if you're monetizing it, not a real risk. It's not like it was in 2020. So I think people are going to start to hopefully see that for what it is. We just came out of a paradigm where speech was suppressed so much. And I think we're still sort of have whiplash from that. As things normalize more, I don't know that we'll be as interested. There's sort of a lag effect. And I think by the end of 2026, you'll start to see that a little more. So we'll see. That's my prediction. I mean, this is a general prediction. I think Vance is going to be the Republican nominee. I think it's going to be more and more kind of energy around Vance. There'll be challenges, but there'll be energy around him too, I think. What other predictions do I have for 2026? I don't know, but my daughter's got to go to bed. So, will your documentary on China ever see the light of day? You remember that. Man, it would have to be completely redone. I've talked about it with the editor. Last time we talked about it was over a year ago. We've had other projects that actually pay. I wanted to crowdfund it, just didn't get the support. So, you know, we have it sitting there. We have like a half-made documentary. I just can't use any of the interviews from it because I don't. And long story short, basically, you know, maybe now I could talk to someone about it, but a lot of the information is dated. Charlie Kirk is actually in that project because we made that project and the interviews were Turning Point USA mostly. Actually, I think they all were. And Charlie Kirk's in it. Footage of Charlie Kirk you've never seen. I've seen it. And it's about China and his concerns over China. And I just don't have, I mean, I even offered. I said, I'll pay for the rights for that stuff. And I haven't been able to obtain the rights to it. So that's my dilemma with that. So I have like the structure for a documentary without the interviews. And we thought, well, we'll just redo the interviews. Obviously, we can't with Charlie Kirk. So, I mean, you could pray about it. If that's something you really want us to do, the things would have to fall into the right place. Okay. I think we're done, guys. I appreciate all the support. And I'm seeing another. I can't take the bait. I can't take it. I can't do other questions. Sorry. Happy New Year. God bless. See you in the next year.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.